Please note, this podcast contains mention of child sexual abuse. In 2015, the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse was set up to investigate where institutions fail to protect children in their care. The inquiry's final report, published in October 2022, laid out a set of powerful recommendations to address past failings and protect future generations of children from abuse. Recommendations for Change is a five-part podcast series from NSPCC Learning, examining why these recommendations are needed, how they'll work if implemented, and what impact they will have on the prevention of child sexual abuse. Episode 5. Justice and Redress. The criminal and civil justice systems play an important role in the way the state responds to child sexual abuse. However, many of ICSA's investigations feature details of inadequate responses from the police, Crown Prosecution Service, and courts. Through the ICSA Truth Project, victims and survivors were able to share their first-hand experiences of the justice system, from initial disclosure of abuse, through investigation by the police force or CPS, and then to court. The ICSA final report summarises the challenges they faced in pursuit of justice, including failures by police forces to fully investigate reports of child sexual abuse and delays in court proceedings, which can be stressful and traumatising for victims and survivors. In this final episode of Recommendations for Change, we'll be exploring how the information and recommendations proposed in the ICSA final report might improve victims' and survivors' experiences of the criminal justice system. We'll also be looking at proposed changes to the available schemes of compensation and redress. The first person I spoke to about policing and the criminal justice system was Ian Critchley. Ian is the National Police Chief's Council Lead for Child Protection and was previously the Deputy Chief Constable of Merseyside Police.
My role, I suppose, can be broken down into sort of three or four key areas. One is making sure that policing consistently develops and enhances its approach to prevent child abuse, to give confidence to victims, both children and adult survivors, to come forward and to bring more offenders to justice. So that's a really critical area for us, and clearly we take much learning from ICSA around that. Two is to enhance partnerships at a national and local level. So I work very much with national key stakeholders, both within government, statutory partners, but also obviously charitable organisations and third sector like the NSPCC as well. And thirdly, I work very closely with the College of Policing and the Vulnerability Knowledge Practice Programme to make sure that we are converting strategy and reviews into action that makes a real difference at every level, whether that's our specialist child protection teams, whether that is our frontline officers, and you know, new 20,000 officers come into the organisation, contact centre staff. Everybody within the system knows their role, also knows the partner role, so we can work together to best protect children from abuse that we know have a lifelong impact.
Ian began by giving an overview of the recommendations and findings in the ICSA final report relating to the justice system.
There is clearly within the 20 key recommendations requirements to review the Joint Inspection of the Victims Code and also removal of the three-year time limitations for civil claims, as well recognising the impact that child abuse has on victims and also timeliness in terms of confidence to report as well. So I think they are some of the key recommendations within that. I remind myself of what was the evidence that was given and provided across the criminal justice system. And it is this point where I continue to reiterate my apology on behalf of policing and the failures that took place over many years in relation to the way we failed to believe, listen, to deal with timeliness of investigation, to signpost to victim support services, to make sure our language was appropriate at all times and there's no way victim blaming, to provide communications in relation to how quick our investigations were progressing or not as well. And I also remind myself that we are part and parcel of a wider criminal justice system. So CPS, there was evidence given within the Truth Project around the need for CPS to give further information around verdicts, sentences and decisions not to prosecute. And the court system, quite frankly, is just too slow for victims once they do make that difficult decision to disclose. Years and years sometimes in the waiting. And then I read from one victim, Bethany, within the Truth Project, whose quote, "The sentence massively diminished the crime. It makes me feel worthless." So again, very careful around when we talk about outcomes, that this is lifelong, and a criminal justice element is just one bit of that.
Focusing in on the police force, the police are often the first to be told about an incident of child sexual abuse. Of the ICSA Truth Project participants who did disclose their abuse at the time it was happening, 33% disclosed to the police. It's therefore critical that police forces respond appropriately to such reports. Unfortunately, as you just alluded to, a number of victims and survivors talked about the police not taking formal action after reports were made. Please, can you explain where the police force has gone wrong in responding to child sexual abuse in the past, and what needs to be done to improve responses to CSA going forward?
Yeah, if I touch first of all, I suppose, on what we're doing in policing and what was identified in ICSA. So really interesting fact that, you know, up till 1988, uncorroborated evidence of a child was admissible, you know, a myth, a criminal justice system that perpetrated a myth about children. We didn't link perpetrators together. So we might have had an investigation A over here, might even have been in the same force, or investigation B over here, but not talking to each other. Perfect case of that was obviously the appalling offences committed by Jimmy Savile around it, which led to obviously developments and us enhancing both the police national database, but also Operation Hydrant around it, a hierarchy that existed in police forces where concerns by our investigators were failed to be able to be acted on by strategic leaders. Talked about victim blaming and belief. We historically have arrested children who were seeking to report crimes of abuse, leaving the abuser free to continue to perpetrate their appalling crimes. Areas like missing, we weren't picking up on the warning signs. Areas like missing, failing to undertake quality return interviews, and really not identifying the scale and nature of it, particularly around group-based offending. Of course, in some areas, we were paying deference to persons in positions of prominence as well, who escaped justice as well, making wrong decisions by police and CPS to prosecute. I've actually just chaired the Child Sexual Abuse Referral Panel, which, and we've also now got since 2013 the right to review, so giving opportunity for victims to review NFA decisions by police and the CPS. Of course, we want to make sure we make the right decisions in the first place. What are we doing around that? We're working very closely with the College of Policing to enhance our training of both our specialist staff and our frontline staff. ICSA makes specific recommendations and reference to special measures for children. So, of course, we've brought in achieving best evidence interviews, and now a victim's testimony can be obviously played in terms of the digital recording of that. But we've also now progressed on to, in some areas, the examination and cross-examination also being done as recorded as well, to again assist a victim within that area. The victim's code, makes specific reference to the victim's code and the 12 rights within there, first published in 2005. I think what's key within there is a right for victims to have a referral to support for victims, yet ICSA found that very few victims were getting advocacy and support during an investigation stage. But as we know, victims need different types of support, particularly around their mental health and well-being, and that just wasn't being provided or signposted with. They have a right to be provided with information about the investigation, the trial and compensation, and this wasn't happening. They have a right to be informed about the outcome and appeal and how the offender will be managed as well, and a right to have the knowledge and use of special measures as well. So good reference in ICSA to make sure that we are fulfilling what is already within the victim's code, and is our responsibility to make sure is undertaken and progressed in a really professional, caring, empathetic way.
You mentioned survivors have a right to advocacy during investigations, but that very few victims and survivors are getting that advocacy. How do we improve access to advocacy during an investigation of child sexual abuse?
I think there's a real challenge here. in terms of advocacy and whether that's for children, whether that's for adult survivors. I see it across a wider area of vulnerability, particularly around advocates for domestic abuse as well. There is a critical role here for police and crime commissioners to make sure there is good joined up funding streams for the advocacy of such a service. I do believe, and one of the recommendations from ICSA was a joint inspection of the victims code, and it does also obviously feature in terms of HMICFRS inspections as to how they are applying the victims code, but clearly it goes beyond the policing responsibility here to other statutory partners as well. And I do think there needs to be a national review of both the funding and the provision of children's and adult survivors advocacy service, particularly around therapeutic support. We know only too well the pressure that's on services like CAMHS as well, and we know only too well that if we don't catch it early and we don't intervene early with the right level of support and intervention, then we know that harm to that young person or adult survivor will get much much worse. And there will be a cost to that. There will be a financial cost, because that will mean that that person will require services for a long time that haven't been provided at the earliest opportunity. But most sadly, there's obviously a human cost of harm, and we will find that that person, that victim of crime, will be in and out of interventions for a long time, if not for the rest of their lives. So there is absolutely a moral requirement and a human requirement on us to improve the position that we're in now. I've talked earlier on about the scale of child abuse. We're now dealing with over 100,000 crimes reported to us. Each one of those persons is a victim in their own right and absolutely deserves the advocacy that will help them through not just any criminal justice process that takes place, and that is important. And that, I being confident that they've been dealt with in the most appropriate way is important, but much beyond that. And I think there's a real stretch and strain on the advocacy service that needs a complete review and an overhaul, as recommended by ICSA.
In our conversation, Ian identified areas for improvement that sit outside of ICSA's 20 main recommendations, particularly the need for police services to improve the way they respond to victims and survivors. Simon Bailey was Ian's predecessor as National Police Chief's Council Lead for Child Protection, serving in the post for 8 years. He is now a member of the Child Safeguarding Practice Review Panel. I spoke to Simon about the same topic: what changes are needed to improve the experiences of the criminal justice system for victims and survivors of child sexual abuse?
For me, it starts with the basics. And first and foremost, it's something I feel very strongly about, I feel passionately about, and have done my best to champion. And that's the importance of victims knowing that the point of reporting their abuse, that they are believed. There is really significant academic research that has been done that talks about one of the biggest hurdles for victims, survivors to overcome is, am I going to be believed at the point of reporting my abuse? And knowing that they are reporting into a justice system that at the start of that report, and I will clarify that, is they are going to be believed, is essential. And victims, I think, are owed that right. However, and this is where it's nuanced, and it's important that there is real clarity around this. Once the report has been taken, once the evidence has been secured as best it can be at that point, thereafter, there has to be an investigation without fear or favour, and police officers, police staff, then need to go wherever the evidence will take them. And I've not spoken to a victim survivor that doesn't agree with that approach. It is not a blind belief. It's important that the victim come forward knowing that they will be believed, but also knowing that thereafter there will be a completely impartial investigation. And I think that has to be step one. Step two then needs to be, throughout the course of the investigation, that the investigating officers, the investigating team, keep the victim survivor fully updated on progress. If they are saying they're going to call them at 11 o'clock tomorrow, they need to make that call. They need to keep them updated on the progress. And even if it's a call that says, there's nothing more I can tell you at this moment in time, or there are no new updates, but just that engagement is so, so important. And then as the investigation progresses and they get to the point of the Crown Prosecution Service making that decision, my personal view is, and it's so important, that the Crown Prosecution Service should be making the decisions based about a decision to charge or not, based upon the evidence that's in front of them. And they shouldn't be taking a bookmaker's approach. It shouldn't be based upon what's the likelihood here. If there is evidence there of abuse, then that evidence should be being put before a jury, for a jury then to decide. And then the final element for me has got to be that the criminal justice system at this moment in time is taking too long to deal with these cases. The statistics are there in the public domain, the number of days it is taking for the moment of report to charge, then to a trial. We have got to speed up the process. And we've got to be looking at the pilots that are taking place in terms of the dedicated sexual offending courts, because I think that's really important, because the staff that are dealing with these cases, the court staff, the prosecutors, should be aware of the trauma that the victim has suffered, and they should be equipped to be able to deal with that. And the courtroom should not become a hostile environment for victims and survivors of abuse. Yes, you have to go through the judicial process. I completely get that. But the bottom line is that it should be done in such a way that the court staff, the environment, appreciates the trauma of what's happened, and the victim survivors should be afforded the appropriate level of support and the awareness as they go into it. And there are ways of being able to deal with that. And you'll be aware of the conversations that have taken place around the pre-recording of evidence and what that might look like. So I think that if we get those principles right around belief, but not a blind belief, around the routine, keeping victim survivors up to date and aware of the investigation as it goes, when the CPS are making those decisions, let's make sure it's a merits-based decision, not a bookmaker's decision. And let's then make sure that when a charge is made, that actually the judicial process is then cognizant of trauma that what is then the witness, the victim witness, has then endured, and how you make the system as supportive as possible.
What steps would you take to make that system more supportive?
I think the key thing is that the specialists working within those courts need to be trauma informed. They need to have that training. Specialist independent sexual violence advisors need to be made available to the victims as well. And I think that's really important that they understand that. And that when you are then dealing within that in that particular court setting, you need to make sure that the support is right there for the victims, that the staff understand, that they have the right support, have an appreciation of what those victim survivors have been exposed to, what it's been like for them, the courage that they have had to come forward and report it. And on the back of that, you then create a very, very different environment.
Finally, is there any specific advice you would give to professionals working across the criminal justice system, in policing, in the courtroom, on how to respond to the ICSA findings?
I think the most important thing for me, having operated within on the policing side of the criminal justice system for 35 years, is to realise that you are not just dealing with a case number. You are dealing with a person, you're dealing with a victim. And that's why recommendation 14 of the inquiry talks about the importance of compliance with the victim's code. And I think that is so important. There needs to be further work done around that and a joint inspection regarding compliance with the victim's code. There are some gaps, and I think ICSA has identified gaps. There needs to be a review to look at the whole system's approach, the criminal justice response and what is taking place. And the recommendation is clear around the inspectors carry out that regular joint inspection on victims' issues, because actually it's really important that the victim survivors are made to feel that they are being treated as a person rather than just another case that's going through the court system.
During our conversations, both Ian and Simon mentioned the Victims Code. Recommendation 14 of the ICSA final report asks the UK government to arrange for a joint inspection of the compliance with the Victims Code in relation to victims and survivors of child sexual abuse. Here's Ian Critchley again to briefly explain what the Victims Code is and how it protects children.
The Victims Code was brought in 2005. It's a statutory mechanism, the right of all victims that needs to be delivered by criminal justice partners. And I've touched on some of those key rights in terms of referral to support for victims, being kept updated on the investigation, being provided with information about the trial and compensation, being informed about the outcomes and obviously appeal, but also how an offender is being managed if they are sentenced to a custodial sentence. Again, their rights to be informed of release around it, being informed about obviously therapeutic and counselling opportunities. Again, a myth that police has perpetuated in the past, where we have almost prevented young people and children receiving therapy and counselling, saying it will harm any criminal trial. It doesn't. You need to deal carefully with obviously any third party material, but there is good process in place around that. And of course, within the Victims Code, knowledge and use of special measures as well. So a really, really important piece of legislation for us, particularly when it comes to how we deal with child victims.
And I asked Simon to explain what gaps there are in the Victims Code.
I think probably the most important thing is, and I know ICSA were aware of this, is the concerns around access to special measures and how actually the quality of witnesses' evidence to the court is enhanced by affording them access to special measures. So again, I think it's all picked up in that compliance with the Victims Code. The code is not being consistently applied and followed. There were concerns around access to special measures, which were all designed around improving the quality of the victim's evidence to the court. So that needs to be looked at. And I believe in June of last year, the government responded to the consultation and talked about enshrining the Victims Code into law. So again, I think that's a positive step forward.
Adjacent to the changes around limitation are the recommendations on making amends to victims and survivors. These include changes to the Criminal Injuries Compensation Scheme and setting up a single redress scheme. I asked Tommy Ogundele, one of the lawyers within the NSPCC specialising in child protection law, to outline the proposed changes to redress.
So when it comes to redress, currently, if an individual was abused as a child in England and Wales, there are three ways they can seek compensation. This is by making a legal claim against their abuser in the civil court, through the criminal court if their abuser is convicted, or from the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority. There is acknowledgement in ICSA's final report that victims and survivors were dissatisfied with the processes of civil litigation and criminal compensation, and that they had negative experiences of seeking redress. So the inquiry recommends that the UK government establishes a single redress scheme in England and Wales, taking into account devolved responsibilities. The recommendation outlines who would be eligible to apply, so essentially victims and survivors of child sexual abuse and exploitation. There is a requirement that there must be a clear connection to state or non-state institutions in England and Wales. There would be a deduction of any previous award from any payments under the scheme. And finally, applicants where their civil claims were previously rejected would be excluded from applying. The scheme should provide payments to eligible applicants through a two-tier system based on a fixed flat rate recognition payment, with the option to apply for a second tier payment. The application process must be accessible and straightforward, should run for 5 years, and should be funded by central and local government with voluntary contributions sought from non-state institutions. The redress scheme is not a substitute for criminal or civil justice systems, and it does not replace the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority.
Thanks to Tommy Ogundele, Simon Bailey, and Ian Critchley. and thank you for listening to the Recommendations for Change podcast series from NSPCC Learning. In this series, we've explored the recommendations laid out by the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse and how they might contribute to a more robust, more effective child protection system in the UK. For more information about any of the specific topics covered in the series, we recommend reading the full ICSA final report. You can also find more safeguarding and child protection resources on the NSPCC Learning website. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this podcast, you can reach out to the NSPCC helpline for support. Call 0808 800 5000 or email help@nspcc.org.uk. This podcast series was produced in autumn 2023. All information was correct at the time of recording, but the world of child protection is ever-changing. To stay up to date, visit the NSPCC Learning website at nspcc.org.uk/learning.